Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts.
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcast. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
Right now, thank you for tuning in to the GSMC MMA podcast. I'm your host, Tate, and we have a lot to talk about. We had quite a few events going on this past weekend. We're going to talk about that UFC 220 card that took place in Boston, in which Stipe Miocic defended his title against Francis Ngannou. And how impressive he looked in his win. We're going to talk about Daniel Cormier and his defense of his light heavyweight title against Volkan Ozdemir. Once again, Stipe and Daniel just looked amazing in their both of their title defenses. We're also going to talk about that Bellator 192 and the start of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix in the first round event, in which Chael Sonnen defeated Quentin Rampage Jackson. And they also had a co-main event where Douglas Lima defended his welterweight title against the Red King, Roy McDonald. And Roy actually is now the new Bellator welterweight champion. And the question I'm going to have is he the new face of Bellator MMA? And then we're going to wrap things up in the final segment, which is the fourth segment, in which we're going to talk about that UFC press conference in which Dana White and the UFC announced the main event for UFC 220 and UFC 223, in which finally we're going to see Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. And yes, Khabib's name is so hard to say. They also announced that Joanna Jędrzejczyk is actually going to get an immediate rematch, and she's going to be getting another shot at the Women's Strawweight Championship against Thug Rose Namajunas. So that's what we're going to cover today, and let's get started here. And we're going to start off by talking about the heavyweight fight for UFC 220, the main event, where Stipe Miocic actually dismantled Francis Ngannou. You know, a lot of people were really looking at this fight as a situation where there was going to be a coming out party for Francis Ngannou. And a lot of people were thinking this is the new reincarnation of Mike Tyson. And Stipe was having nothing to do with that. Stipe had set the record for the most title defenses by beating Francis Ngannou. It seemed, I was about to say stop Francis Ngannou, but he didn't stop him. Francis made it through the whole fight, but Stipe just owned him pretty much from the first round. The first round, it was really hairy, you know, and you know, when you're looking at this, you're looking at Francis and you're just saying, man, he is just a beast of a man. And it's one of those things where it's like, can anyone stop him? So I was actually worried about Stipe when I was looking at this. I really like Stipe as a champion, but I looked at it and I just said, I just don't know how he's going to handle the power of Stipe. There was a lot of questions dealing with Francis Ngannou that hadn't been answered. And the two biggest ones were the biggest factors in this fight. the biggest question, the question for Stipe was, could he take the power of Francis Ngannou? That was a big question on Stipe, but there was two main questions that rose before this fight with Francis Ngannou. And that was, number one, he had never, how is he going to handle if he gets taken down? And number two, no one had ever seen him really get out of like the first or second round. He's just been so dominant that no one had really taken him to deep waters. This was going to be his first 5-round fight at a championship level. And he's fighting a guy that has world-class wrestling skills. It was going to be one of those tests. And quite frankly, as impressive as Francis Ngannou was, he failed that test. I think, when you look at this and you see how it went down, when you look at like control time in this fight, Stipe controlled Francis Ngannou for 15 straight minutes. When you look at, how once Stipe took him down, Francis had a hard time getting back up. He didn't seem like he knew how to defend himself. When he was on his back, Stipe ended up taking him down 6 times. And the ground and pound was just devastating. When you look at total strikes, Stipe landed 240. He threw 244, but he landed 200 at an 82% clip. And as far as significant strike, power strikes, he landed 70, significant strikes. Francis had no answer for this. When you look at it, when you break it down by round, when you look at it and you just say, and round one was when Francis Ngannou was at his most dangerous. That's when he threw most of his shots. Because Francis did not have much time. He got taken down twice in the first round, but he ended up throwing 18 strikes or landing 18 strikes. 15 of them were significant. So there was a point where Stipe had to weather the storm. He handled the power and the pressure that Francis Ngannou put on him really well. But he was actually landing just as much as Francis Ngannou was, with throwing 24 strikes, 16 of them significant, plus 2 takedowns. He truly controlled him for half of the fight, for half of that round. When you rolled into the second round, I was kind of surprised at how winded Francis Ngannou was by the beginning of the second round. By the second round, it was very obvious to me that Francis Ngannou had a stamina issue. And I think part of the reason why he had a stamina issue, when you look at this fight, it was more about him trying to throw very hard, heavy shots in the first round. One of the things that Conor McGregor always talks about is being super efficient. Well, Francis Ngannou was not efficient. He was loading up and he was trying to take Stipe out early in that first round. And when you do that, there's a risk reward. When you fight the way Francis Ngannou fights, there's a risk and reward. If you land, you got a short night. And that's kind of what happened with Alistair. It was a short night. Power shot, about took his head off, and it was over. But when you adopt that style, you burn out. You burn hot and then you burn out. And you could tell that was Stipe's game plan, to take him into deep waters and drown him. And by midway through the second round, this fight was over in my eyes. I did not think that there was any way that Francis Ngannou could even mount any type of attack. The second round, it was clearly a Stipe round. By round three, was just a rough day for Francis Ngannou. Stipe took him down, controlled him for over 3 minutes in the fight. He landed 12 significant strikes, 47 strikes total. Francis Ngannou only landed one significant strike at that point. He was in deep trouble, and he hadn't even made it to the championship rounds, but he was in deep, deep trouble. Rolled into the fourth round, and you look at this, and this is the round, in the fourth round, where I thought, you know, if there was ever a situation to stop this, a chance to stop this fight, this was the round. Francis Ngannou had no answer. Stipe controlled him. He took him down, and he controlled him for over 4 minutes of a five-minute round. He threw 95 shots on Francis Ngannou, landed 82. 18 were major significant strikes. And when you look at Francis Ngannou, he threw three shots, landed zero. He did not, in the fourth round, he was like a zombie walking out there. He was just exhausted. He didn't land anything. He was in trouble. Rolled into the fifth round, and you look at this, and this is the round where he tried to muster up more energy, but it was over. The game plan that Stipe had put together had worked. It was a masterpiece. He controlled in the fifth round. Stipe controlled him for over 2 minutes. He threw 21 shots, 18 landed, 7 of them were significant strikes. And Francis Ngannou, who actually did land a big shot in that fifth round, that was the only major shot that he landed. But at that point, he was just too gassed, and he had no answer for Stipe Miocic and his game plan. In the end, the judges scored it 5-0. I scored it 5-0. Matter of fact, I scored a couple of rounds as a 10-8 round. It was that lopsided. And you know, when you look at this fight and you see how impressive this was, and the fact that he had set the record for most title defenses, you look at this and the question that comes up is Stipe Miocic the greatest UFC heavyweight champion of all time? And a lot of people are saying, yes, he is. When you look and you say, you know, three title defenses gets you the record, it's not that impressive. But when you look at with the heavyweight division, the fact that no one has ever defended the title that many times shows you how dangerous that division is. You can win the title, but it is very hard to hold on to it. And Stipe has done that. Do I look at him as the greatest heavyweight champion of all time, or the greatest? Some people were even saying the greatest heavyweight of all time. I don't look at him as the greatest heavyweight of all time. I still give that to Fedor as my number one. Fabricio is number two. And then I would put Stipe and Cain tied as far as greatest heavyweights. And looking at all organizations. But when you're talking about UFC heavyweight champions, I think you have to just look at, is it really Stipe or Cain? And the fact of the matter is, Cain did not. Whether it was, you know, a bad night with Fabricio at high altitude, which was a bad decision, which was a bad situation for Cain, and so he lost the title. So when you look at UFC heavyweight champions, I may not make Stipe the greatest heavyweight of all time, but you can't argue with the stats that he has defended the title more times than anyone else. So, you know, I can understand where people would say he's the greatest UFC heavyweight champion of all time. With Francis Ngannou, when you look at what's next for Francis Ngannou, and a lot of people are talking about him fighting the Black Beast next. I personally think the best, after watching this fight, he's a young guy. The best decision that I think he could make is I would take the rest of the year off. And I know you, when you hear like it's January and you're saying take the rest of the year off if you're Francis Ngannou, I say yes, that's exactly what I say, is because Francis Ngannou was exposed. He is an impressive fighter. This guy has a bright future ahead of him. But now Stipe has laid out the blueprint to how to beat him. Take him down, wear him out, take him to deep water and drown him. He has his ground skills are very subpar. And the fact is, he's only been doing this for 4 years. So this guy has lots of upside. But the reason why I say he shouldn't take another fight the rest of the year, or at least take an extended period of time off, he needs to get into the gym and work on his wrestling and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And he needs to work on it a lot. Because he's going to be in big trouble. If you put him in the ring with like a Fabricio or Kane or anyone else that's high level, if he doesn't get him out in the first round and land that big bomb, it's over for him. That's why, you know, when you start looking at what's next for him, if you're talking about fights, you're looking at a Mark Hunt or Black Beast as far as opponents. I don't like that one. I think he'd be better served going to, you know, working on his wrestling, working on his Brazilian jiu-jitsu. A place that I think would be a perfect place for him would to go to AKA. But I, you know, AKA has Kane, and I don't think they're really looking across and have two heavyweights in their stable. But a gym like that is very strong, very high wrestling IQ, AKA Team Alpha Male, someone like that that's going to really help him work with wrestling. He has to do that in order to advance. If he gets his wrestling and being able to operate off his back, if he gets that together, then I think he can still make a title run. I just say he was rushed a little too fast. He came to the party just a little too fast this time. And I don't fault the UFC for putting him in that situation because he had deserved it. He had annihilated everyone he had fought. He had annihilated one of the top contenders in the division and Alistair Overeem, and he deserved his title shot, but it was just a little too soon. Take time off, get your wrestling together, come back bigger, badder, stronger. Now, Stipe, as they talk about Stipe, and not only are they talking about is he the greatest heavyweight of all time, but everyone's saying, what's next? And one of the things that surprised me was that everyone, when you talk about what's next for him, everyone talked about, they brought up Fabricio. Cain Velasquez was brought up as well as a possible opponent for him. But during the press conference, Dana surprised me, because what he said, who he thinks should be next, is Daniel Cormier. And that was a big shocker for me. I wasn't expecting that. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens next for Stipe. When we come back, speaking of Daniel Cormier, when we come back, we're going to talk about that Daniel Cormier fight against Volkan Ozdemir, and how, what's going to be next for him. And then maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that possible Stipe Daniel Cormier fight. When we come back, we'll cover that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
Yeah. All right, we're back. And in the last segment, we were talking about UFC 220 and the main event where Stipe Miocic just dominated in defending his title against Francis Ngannou and how impressive he was. And when we ended things, we were talking about how I was very surprised in the press conference when everyone was talking about what's next for Stipe Miocic. And Dana White said the fight he would like to see is Daniel Cormier. And that rolls us right into what we're talking about here, the co-main event at this event here, which had Daniel Cormier versus Volkan Ozdemir. And, you know, it's kind of weird when you look at the Stipe Miocic fight versus Francis Ngannou and then Daniel Cormier versus Volkan. It had two veteran champions defending their titles against two very strong, powerful upstarts who had been knocking out, you know, everyone that stepped in the ring with them. But the surprising thing that happened in these fights was that both of these guys, Francis Ngannou and Volkan, really had no answer to the veterans in this fight. And this is one of those situations where Daniel Cormier made me think about back when, you know, when I was a kid, and I was a pretty good basketball player when I was a kid. And one of the things that used to always bug me was when I was younger, I would play basketball with my dad. I'd go to the park and I'd play basketball with my friends and I'd just dominate. And I'd be so impressive and I just thought I was the man. And then I'd come home or hang around the house and one day my dad and I would play basketball. And he would beat me every single time. And it would always bug me. But my dad would always have those old man tricks. He'd grab your jersey a little bit. He'd rough you up a little bit. He was just always, he always had little tricks on how to slow you down that your friends at your age didn't have those tricks. Well, that's what this fight reminded me of. Daniel had all the old man tricks on how to control Volkan. Volkan came in with one game plan. I'm going to knock him out. And he realized very early on he was not going to knock Daniel Cormier out. Daniel had a game plan. Daniel, not only, the thing that was surprising, not only could Daniel handle the pressure that Volkan was putting on him, but he could actually, at some point, I actually thought he was outstriking him. When you look at the fight as a whole and total strikes and everything, you look at this fight and Daniel just controlled, to me, Daniel controlled it from start to finish. The fight was ended up being stopped, but when you in the second round, but when you look at it in the first round, you know, Volkan came out and guns a-blazing. He threw a lot of shots early on. He threw 83 shots, landed 41, 37 significant strikes because he came in with the game plan that he was going to knock Daniel out in the first round. And he really believed that. Daniel was much more efficient. Where Volkan was landing, and Volkan landed about a 49% clip. Daniel landed at a 52% clip, throwing 56 punches, 29, threw 56, landed 29, 27 of those were significant strikes. But the big thing that really got Volkan in trouble was that takedown. Once Daniel got him on the ground, Volkan had no answer. I repeat, Volkan had no answer. Daniel took him down. He roughed him up. And this was, I mean, it was just a brutal, brutal situation. Volkan barely got out of the first round. Pretty much, I would just say got saved by the bell. In the second round, Daniel took him down. He controlled him. He put him in a cross and I was gonna say crossbow, but it wasn't. I can't think what it's called right now. But he had him down, had him stretched out. He had no defense, and Daniel was just pounding him. Threw 57 shots, landed 55 of them, and Vulcan was just getting just annihilated. Eventually, the referee had to step in and save him. At 3 minutes in the second round, it was just too much. It was just way too much Daniel for Vulcan Ozdemir. It was just an impressive showing. As a matter of fact, I would say, to me, this was the most impressive I'd ever seen Daniel. Daniel's always looked impressive, but you could tell he had something to prove. And then afterwards, when you listen to the press conference and you listen to him kind of say that he felt like this was his, you know, he felt like he had to show he was champ. Now he feels like he's now champ again, because the title was just kind of given to him after he lost the after he got knocked out by John Jones. And so the one thing I would say, you can tell that if I was going to give some advice to Daniel, put that John Jones situation behind you and move on. I know that they had the John Jones came out with, he did a polygraph and showed that he did not intentionally take any performance enhancing drugs or anything like that. And I don't know if he's good, Daniel, if John Jones is going to get suspended, but it's time for Daniel to move on and just put this behind him. He was so impressive. And you look around and you say, what's next for Daniel Cormier? The first thing is he announced that March of 2019 will be his last fight. He will not fight after next year, the beginning of next year. So he has a year. He's going to fight for about a year and then he's going to retire. That's the first thing. And that always worries me when it comes to a fighter. When you give a significant date, a steadfast date of when you're done, once you start thinking about retirement, that's a very scary thing, because when you can't be a fighter with 1 foot in and 1 foot out. So the fact, but he did announce that this is his last year, and March 2019 will be the end of his career. And he has a lot going on. Also, when you start looking at what's next for him, when you look around and you say Jimmy Manawa as a possible title contender, but Jimmy Manawa just got stopped by Vulcan. So the most logical one you would think would be Alexander Gustafsson, someone that he already fought, a spectacular fight. But Gustafsson's injured. So it goes right back to what we were talking about before. Is this the moment where Daniel Cormier is going to go back up to the heavyweight division and take on Stipe Miocic? One of the things I'll tell you is the fact that Dana White has said that's the fight he would like to see. I think this fight is going to happen. Cain Velasquez, and Daniel really didn't want to talk about that because he just said that Cain is back in the gym and he's coming back. And they never want to be fighting in the same division. Daniel doesn't want to hold the title up or anything away, take an opportunity away from Cain. But this is the reason why I say this is the perfect fight. And I was against this originally. And originally the reason why I was against this is because you have a situation where there's already too many. There's this whole interim championship thing. I hate that. Conor McGregor's held up a title for over almost going on over a year, going on 2 years. And then with George St. Pierre just dropping another title and tying up another title, having the heavyweight and the light heavyweight title tied up with one person is a bad situation. But this is the exception to the rule. This is a true super fight. Never has the heavy, you're going to have the heavyweight champion versus the light heavyweight champion going at it. Two dominant fighters. when you look at the light heavyweight championship, the greatest of all time is John Jones. But there's a red flag. He's been hit with a few PED allegations against him. And so if you're someone that eliminates John Jones as the greatest light heavyweight of all time, then it is a clear picture. If you eliminate John Jones because of the PED allegations, then Daniel Cormier is the greatest light heavyweight champion of all time. Or if you do count John Jones in, Daniel Cormier is the second greatest light heavyweight champion of all time. And then you mix in the fact that Daniel has been fighting at heavyweight and there was never, ever anyone that could stop Daniel. Daniel was an undefeated light heavyweight. Light heavyweight. He was an undefeated heavyweight. He fought in Strikeforce. He fought in the UFC. And no one has ever been able to figure out Daniel at the heavyweight division. He's a smaller heavyweight, but he is a tough heavyweight. And so that's the reason why I do see this fight actually happening. For Daniel and Kane, Kane is just getting back from injury. He's been out of the picture for a while. I don't see Kane getting an immediate title picture, getting an immediate title shot. I think if it's not Daniel, it would be Fabricio. And that Kane would have to fight someone else. So that's the reason why I say Daniel is a good fit. Daniel could come in, he could fight for the heavyweight title. And by the time it's time for Kane to get ready to fight for the title again, Daniel's already thinking about retirement. So I think now is the time to do this. I really like this opportunity. Now with Volkan, what's next for Volkan? It's going to be interesting. Volkan takes a major step back. I'm not sure where you put him right now, but I tell you this, just like Francis Ngannou, he needs to take some time in getting his wrestling skills together. Daniel really exposed him and showed how to beat Volkan. Volkan has to work on his wrestling and Brazilian jiu-jitsu before he starts thinking about getting back in the ring again. Both of these guys, I personally think, should take some extended time off to round out their game. They're both young enough that both of these guys have the potential to be light heavyweight champion and heavyweight champion, but not until they round out their game and get their ground game together, their ground defense together, so that they can make a run. Because you cannot get annihilated like the way these two guys have gotten. They both got annihilated. So with that, that's pretty much all I can say. I can't think of anywhere else I would put Volkan. Anyone else I would, if I was managing Volkan, it would just be take some time, get your ground game together, your defense together, and then come back. Daniel, I'm all on board especially with the light heavyweight division being already cleaned out. Daniel and John Jones pretty much cleaned out that light heavyweight division now. With Daniel, do you give him Jimmy Manuwa? And I say no. So it's the Stipe fight. I'm going to stick my neck out there and I'll say that Stipe fight's going to happen. When we come back, we're going to go on break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that Bellator event that's this past Friday, Bellator 192, and the start of the Heavyweight Grand Prix. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
All right, we're back. And we were just recapping that UFC 220 card. We talked about the main event. Stipe Miocic's keeping his title, winning the keeping the heavyweight title and stopping Francis Ngannou. Pretty much a dominant performance by Stipe, winning all five rounds, and then Daniel Cormier defending his light heavyweight title against Volkan Ozdemir in a lights-out performance, dominating Volkan and stopping him in the second round. And now we're going to talk about Bellator. Bellator 192 and the start of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix. That was this weekend as well. Bit of a surprise. It was Chael Sonnen versus Quentin Rampage Jackson, and Chael won that on all scorecards 29-28. My takeaway on this is this: Chael Sonnen is a blown up middleweight fighting heavyweight. And he was fighting Rampage Jackson, a light heavyweight, for most of his career. I thought Chael put together a really great game plan. Being the smaller, quicker fighter, he used that to his advantage. The one thing that I took away from this is that Rampage, the last two times I've seen Rampage fight, he's fought at heavyweight. And he just doesn't look good as a heavyweight. I really feel like Rampage has to start working on his cardio. He's at the tail end of his career, and I don't know if it's just Father Time has caught him, or he's fighting at a weight class that he just shouldn't be at. And I think it's a little bit of both. But if Quentin plans on continuing the fight, he needs to get back down to that light heavyweight division. He's just too slow, too predictable at that weight class. He wants to swing for the fences. His timing's off. He's a lot slower. And like King Mo and Chael, you're able to time him. Throw the big punch, tie him up. And he doesn't have enough energy when he gets behind. He doesn't have enough energy or enough speed to actually come back once he gets in a hole. So the key with Rampage is not get caught with a big shot, get out to a big lead, wear him down, and you'll run away with the fight. And that's not the Rampage that I'm used to seeing. So he really has to do something to improve here. Chael looked good. When I look at Chael for this, he's going to be moving on. And he's going to be fighting the winner of Frank Mir versus Fedor. Fedor is the most optimal opponent for Chael because Frank Mir is just so much bigger. Even Fedor is going to be a much larger man. I worry that Chael is going to be just way too small to make a major impact against those two guys, the winner of those two guys. But he looked really good. Chael is moving on. I love the interview with Big John McCarthy and him in the ring. Also, it was the debut of Big John McCarthy in the ring. That's going to take some getting used to see Big John McCarthy, not as the referee, but as a show, on-air personality interviewing fighters in the ring. He seemed a little rusty, not necessarily rusty, but, working out the kinks here. But it's still kind of hard for me to take that in. But Chael was in rare form in the ring. Enjoyed that. So it's on, and so Chael Sonnen is moving on. Also on this card, you also had the co-main event, which we were looking forward to seeing. The co-main event was Douglas Lima, the welterweight champion, against Roy McDonald. And this was a fight that originally was supposed to be the main event, and then Bellator changed it to the co-main event. And I think they made the right decision. It should have been that way from the beginning, because you know, more people. I think I was looking for more to the heavyweight Grand Prix than the main event, but the co-main event. But it did not disappoint. Douglas Lima, who is truly, truly one of the best welterweights in the world, against Rory McDonough, which is considered one of the top five welterweights in the world. And that's the question that comes up. Roy wins this in a unanimous decision. Pretty much early on, Lima with leg kicks had put a huge hematoma on Roy McIlroy's leg, McDonald's leg. He was not, at one point, I don't think he could even put weight on his leg. So without being able to stand, Roy McDonald actually put together a game plan of taking Lima down, grinding him out, ground and pound, so that he can control the fight, and he fought that way. He couldn't even walk out of the ring afterwards, but even on one leg, he was able to win the welterweight title. And the statement that came out after this was that Bellator finally has a champion that is actually better than the UFC champion. And that was the statement going around. And I disagree. And the reason why they say that is Roy McDonald beat Tyron Woodley many years ago. And so they're saying because Tyron Woodley lost to Roy McDonald, Roy McDonald was actually a better fighter than Tyron Woodley. Fights happen at different times in a fighter's career. I would say, even if you look at Tyron Woodley 3-4 years ago, I think Tyron is a better fighter today than when they fought the first, when Roy and Tyron fought the first time. So I don't necessarily say that Roy is the better fighter. When you look around and you say, in that time, Roy lost to Robbie Lawler and he lost to Wonder Boy, in which Tyron beat both of those guys. So even though you say head-to-head, Roy beat Tyron, that was some time ago. But when you look at common opponents, Tyron Woodley has actually beat both of those guys. I would still say that Tyron Woodley is the better fighter and is ranked higher. I have a lot of respect for what Roy McDonald has done in the ring. I think he should be the face of Bellator. I think the Bellator should really get behind him. He's really, truly the first big free agent who has come over to Bellator who has actually panned out. Most of the fighters that have come over from the UFC to Bellator has hit a speed bump and has struggled. And so Roy is the first one to really come over, look impressive, and should be the guy that they're going to get behind. And, you know, I really hope that happens. With that being said, though, you look at things. The biggest question that I had is how well would this fight do, especially since the fact that Bellator 192 was head to head against the UFC. This card did actually very well, had over 1 million views. So it did great against the UFC. It didn't outperform the UFC. Everyone could watch both of them. And it looks like a lot of people did just that, watch both fights. It also tells me, watching the very first round of that heavyweight Grand Prix, Bellator is onto something here. There's a lot of interest in this heavyweight Grand Prix, and you picked the right fight to start off, to kick things off. By watching Chael and Rampage, it got me fired up and ready for seeing Big Country fight, seeing Fedor, seeing how Frank Mir is going to come back, thinking about Ryan Bader versus King Mo. I'm actually, after watching this, I am definitely interested in seeing what happens. I will definitely tune in, and I think a lot of the audience is going to draw in more than just that hardcore MMA fan. I think this heavyweight Grand Prix is going to draw in the casual fan. This is the perfect event to start off the year for Bellator. So I think they did a good thing. They did a really smart thing by changing and making the heavyweight Grand Prix the main event. And so they're going to keep on doing this, and they're going to ride that wave. I predict a big start to the beginning of the year for Bellator because of this. So when looking at that, you know, and then also you also had Aaron Pico, which was their star signing, their blue chip prospect who came in, and you know, Pico had came in with all the star, with all the, you know, the hype behind him, and he started out really rough getting stopped, but since then he's been on a roll. He had a first round stoppage. This event is looking is shaping up to be you mean not necessarily the event of the heavyweight Grand Prix is looking good. The prospect of Aaron Pico is looking good. Then you turn around and you say Roy McDonald, he's looking good. Bellator has something going here, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. Okay, we're going to take our last break of the show, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the press conference that was held this week, in which the UFC and Dana White had made an announcement for UFC 222 and UFC 223, in which they made an announcement that it will not be Conor McGregor that will be defending his title, but instead Khabib versus Tony Ferguson for the undisputed title. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC, Invicta FC, Bellator, and ONE Championship, we got the fights covered. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back, and we just got done talking about the Bellator 192 event, the heavyweight Grand Prix, the fact that Roy McDonald is now the new welterweight champion, and now we're going to talk about that UFC press conference that was done this past Friday, in which Dana White announced that there will be a fight between Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov for not the interim light heavyweight championship, but the undisputed heavyweight championship. The only problem with this announcement, and I'm super excited about this fight because this is the fight that everyone's been wanting to see for a long time. The only problem I have with this is I think Dana's confused on what you call undisputed. They made the announcement that the interim champion would be defending the title against Khabib Nurmagomedov, and Dana said it's for the undisputed title. But then when everyone asked, are you stripping Conor McGregor of the lightweight title, he would not go out on the limb and say yes. He said it's for the lightweight title, the undisputed lightweight title, But when everyone asks, so you're stripping Conor McGregor, he said, no, I didn't say that. But this is for the undisputed title. The whole point and definition of an undisputed champion is there is no other champion. You can't have Conor McGregor as the lightweight champion and then say that Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov is the undisputed champion, because then there is a dispute. That's my only problem with this. Super excited about seeing this fight. This is a fight that has been waiting to happen. When I look at this and I look at Khabib, Khabib has been a force of nature, has been going through and has been demolishing everyone you put in front of him. El Kakui, Tony Ferguson, has been just lights out. You have two unstoppable forces that are about to collide. And I really don't know. I'm still going back and forth on who I think is going to win. Right now, I'm still leaning toward Khabib because I do not see, I just don't see how I can, I can't picture Khabib losing. But then again, that same token, Tony Ferguson, I can't really, it's hard for me to even picture Tony Ferguson losing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the UFC 223. That's going to be the main event. Another announcement that they made at this press conference, which I was super excited for, is the co-main event. They announced that Joanna Jędrzejczyk will get an immediate rematch against Thug Rose Namajunas for the UFC Women's Strawweight Championship. That will be the co-main event at UFC 223. This is a fight I am super looking forward to. Talk about unstoppable force. Up until the moment that Joanna ran into Rose, no one could figure out Joanna. No one, and when you couldn't even picture the concept of Joanna tapping because of strikes to anyone, and Rose was able to do that. The question is, was that a fluke situation? Does Rose really have the recipe to stop the unstoppable force of Joanna Jędrzejczyk? Or was it a bad weight cut that really did affect Joanna Jędrzejczyk? That's the one thing that everyone is going to be looking to see. Does Joanna come back to her regular form, or has Rose figured her out? When you go back and it's kind of hindsight and you look and you find out how bad Joanna's weight cut was, it definitely opens up some questions to see, with a completely healthy Joanna, how will Rose do? I am a big fan of both of these ladies, and I am super looking forward to this women's strawweight championship fight. I also want to say something about Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I have never seen anyone hold their head so high after losing a title match, or after losing any match. She has been everywhere, carrying the Olympic torch. She's on Facebook. She's on Twitter. She's everywhere, and she's having the time of her life, just like she was when she was champion. Joanna is enjoying her life. She enjoyed her life as champion. She's enjoying her life outside of the ring as former champion. I really like what she's done. That shows a person that is super mentally tough. And a mentally tough fighter is hard to beat. She's mentally tough in the ring. She's mentally tough outside the ring. That's what makes Joanna such a tough fighter to deal with. And then you look at Rose. Rose is riding high after this win. A lot of times it's a lot harder to be the champ instead of the hunter. This is one situation where she's going to have to come back and she's going to have to fight and defend her title. I wish the UFC would do more of this. I think fighters, if you're a champ and you've been able to defend the title a couple times, I think all champions who have won the title and has defended the title a couple times should always get an immediate rematch. I think that's a policy that the UFC should adapt. I really like this situation here. Watch it, looking at this fight. So super excited about that. And then the third announcement was, and which everyone kind of knew, is that the featherweight championship will be on the line, where the champ, Max Holloway, will be defending his title against Frankie Edgar, and they will be headlining UFC 222. This is going to be, this is an interesting fight here too, because you look at the champ who has, and when I say champ, I mean, look, you look at Max Holloway and the fighters that he's fought. Frankie Edgar is a different type of fighter. He's going to have that ground and pound. He's going to be able to take, you know, is he going to be able to take Max Holloway down and ride him out, use ground and pound to take care of him? This is the final hurdle for Max Holloway to see what kind of fighter he really is. Max has been lights out and has been impressive. This, in my opinion, could be the toughest test of his career. And I know a lot of people say, you know, what about the Conor McGregor fight? Wouldn't that be his toughest test of the year of his career? This is different. This is him defending the title. This is him at championship level. Frankie Edgar is presenting a puzzle that we really haven't seen, someone with this level of ground game. Looking forward to seeing how Max Holloway handles this. He looks, in the press conference, he looks super confident. He looks ready to go. This is going to be a great fight. And Frankie has openly admit he thinks this is going to be his last shot at the title. So it's either all or nothing. I think Frankie's going to put it all out on the line. This is definitely worth seeing. This concludes this episode of the GSMC MMA podcast. When we come back in a couple of days, we'll be recapping, not necessarily recapping, we will be talking about the up-and-coming fight between Derek Brunson and Jacare Sosa. Thank you for tuning in. Remember to, you can always follow us on iTunes. Remember to subscribe and follow us. Always be willing to put on a review, hopefully a nice review, because that really helps us out if you enjoy the show. And with that, to all, a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.